the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It's myself, Momo Utsi, and alongside me, once again, back from Vegas, the three-time NBA champion, who ain't called me while he is in Vegas, who ain't do the podcast while he's in Vegas. I think Vegas won that series. Mr. BJ Armstrong. I think Vegas won the clean sweep. 4-0.
No. You know, Bo, I was out working. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of business to take care of out there. Congratulations to our Milwaukee Bucks. And
congratulations to Darvin Ham and Taurean Prince, undefeated. Back-to-back NBA Cup. Taurean Prince, the first player to make a milli off the NBA Cup.
Hey, but who's counting? Who's counting? And it was great. But I had a great time in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is without question. They have the ability as a city to host events. And there was a lot of basketball being played over the weekend in the last couple of days. And it was good. It was only one thing missing. You know, my partner wasn't there, Mo, but he was there in spirit. He was there. Wait, we felt your vibe in Vegas.
Tell her I said, what's up? Well, I wasn't invited to the NBA Cup. I spoke to our good friends at the NBA. They said, no. They said, we have our influencer program. Apparently, I'm not influencing enough. You know,
And there were a lot of influencers there.
Maybe if I go on reality TV or something, then they'll think I'm an influencer. But yeah, they didn't invite me to the NBA Cup. They ain't really trying to do a lot with me. I don't know why, because I come out here every day to, you know, promote their league and talk about their league and, you know, really give the people what they want. It's cool though. You know, I'm used to it. So here. I don't need to be in Vegas. I didn't feel like I was missing much. The atmosphere in the games, at least, didn't seem electric. You know, like when it was the finals, I was mad I was missing the finals. I wasn't mad that I missed the NBA Cup, though. Like, obviously, it would be good to network and whatnot. And a lot of people ask me, they're like, Mo, you know, like, now Woj has retired. Why don't you become the guy who breaks news? Do you know what I say to them, BJ?
What's that?
I say, I don't break news. I make news.
Ooh.
Because, you know, we do this show every day and our regular listeners know what we do. And then we had a few clips of the show go a little viral recently. And, you know, our editor Bart sent me Shaquille O'Neal's podcast last week and Shaq was discussing what we were talking about on the podcast. Although his co-host Adam Lefko failed to mention the podcast that they were discussing about. Adam Lefko. I'll leave that there. But today, ESPN released an article based on what we was talking about. So I'm going to stay here in my house. And don't worry, we'll make the news happen anyway. I don't need to break the news. I don't need to be chasing around GMs asking for trade rumors. We'll just sit here and make the news instead. How about that?
Well, Mo, that's what you do. You know, you don't break it. You make it. So,
hey,
you know, that's what you said. I'm going to go with it.
I'm just saying. We got NBA Paris coming up. I'm still waiting to receive my invitation. NBA, if you're listening, I know you're listening, but I ain't mad. I'm still here. I'm do what I do and give the people what they want. But, you know, before we talk about that situation, let's talk about the NBA Cup, BJ, because you were there.
Yes.
Was the crowd as bad in person as it looked on TV?
You know, Mo, I stay on the court. So,
but that factors into the games. Well, because talking about on the court, there's no way you can tell me that a game in front of the fans at Madison Square Garden is the same as a game played anywhere else in the world, for example. So it does factor into on the court. With the exception of them counting down 10 seconds on Giannis' free throws, I haven't really seen nothing from the crowd. Especially during the semifinals, it was abysmal. But what was the atmosphere like inside the arena?
Well, I'm just going to say this and I'm moving on with it. I think it's very difficult to be in a neutral location.
I'm telling you, BJ should be president. I'm telling you.
No, I have to stay in my lane.
I respect it.
And I always say this, what happens in between those lines, Mo, that's what I do. Mo, that's what Mo, Mo it, wants to know
these
what's
things
going
factor
on.
Into what happens in between the lines. And yeah, the bigger picture here, okay,
it, is and it's the what, holiday, and it's the holiday season. It's, yeah, there's so much going on here.
You know,
so
we don't take no holidays, but what happens in between the lines is the game, okay?
Right.
But this is all part of the business, and we always talk about the business of basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the experience of fans is a big part of the business of basketball. The experience of viewers at home is a big part of the business of basketball. So when I talk about things that aren't necessarily on the court, it's not gossip. it's real stuff.
I know. I'm
saying.
I know.
So that's what I'm saying to... for fans watching the games at home. It looks very lackluster in terms of it didn't have the draw of a cup final like you would have here in Europe. If this was in Europe, they would be going crazy.
In speaking with the teams, and I happen to have been staying at one of the hotels there, that one of the teams.
Jeez, five-star lifestyle.
Well, I know. It just they thought I was probably part of the group, and that's why they let me in. You know, it was interesting because they had been there for like four or five days. And so it was just it's an interesting dynamic. One of the coaches mentioned to me, you know, I don't want to say which team. One of the coaches mentions to me, he was like, what is this, college? And I thought, what is this? You know, we've been here for like 4 days in the middle of the season. And I thought, you know what? I don't know how I would react if I was in one city for 4 days. Because I didn't really experience that, you know? So it was interesting. It's the holidays. You have a lot of things going on. It's on a neutral court. In-season tournament. So I just kind of observe. So I don't think I'm qualified to even answer that question. But let's just say this. It didn't look like a traditional NBA game. Now, I know it was the NBA production, but the game... But isn't that the whole idea? It wants to have a different feel. It wants to have a different look. It wants to have its own... You know, personality, I guess, if that's the right word that you want to bring to it. So, you know, here we are. So, you know, I just want to say congratulations to our Milwaukee Bucks. And then let's move on. Now, if you want to talk about what happened on the court, I'm all for that, Mo. I'm all for that one.
Well, it's interesting. Being there for 4 days, OKC now has a crazy schedule in the coming days because obviously they were out of town for 4 days. Dallas has 42 road games now and a disadvantage in tie breaks against OKC and Golden State because they went for it. I don't understand how all that works. I think the biggest problem with the NBA Cup is the average fan doesn't understand how it works. But it is what it is. I like that the Bucks didn't want to celebrate afterwards and pop champagne. I don't know if they're going to raise a banner like the franchise did last year, but well done, Milwaukee. It's a good way for them to turn their season around. You know what I mean? It gives them a right. signal they're on their way. And I've been saying I want to see them compete against good teams. And their defense in the game last night against OKC couldn't hit any shots. How much of that do we attribute to the Milwaukee defense, and how much do we attribute that to a cold shooting night?
Well, you always like to give, you know, whether you believe it or not, you want to give the other team credit because they were playing defensively. You know what? I really like what this Milwaukee Bucks team is doing, especially on the defensive end, because you have Brooke Lopez and then you have Giannis. So they have two excellent backline defenders who take pride on the defensive end. And not only do they protect the rim, they both block shots. So I love what they're doing. Damian Lillard is really beginning to, he's just really progressing nicely.
You can see the chemistry, you know, starting to improve with Giannis.
Yeah, last year, you know, but it makes sense. It always makes sense.
And also, he always plays well against OKC. Like, his biggest career moment is always against OKC. So
yeah, you know, but he is beginning, you know, his movements defensively, offensively, he just seems crisp. You know, I think one of the words that I can best describe him right now, he seems very engaged into this process. And I love how he has embraced his role within this group. And they seem, as veterans, to have figured out something. So
You know, it was funny. I saw a tweet, and it was Dame walking. You know, they have the trophy on the red carpet, and he was walking into the arena past the trophy. This year, when he walked past, he looked so locked in. And someone did a side by side with a video of him last year, where he walked in with blacked out sunglasses, swaggering, smiling. And maybe last year he just enjoyed the mid season trip to Vegas a little bit too much, whereas this year he was more focused. That's what how I'll say that.
Yeah, well, they look locked in, and like I said, you know, I was there. I kind of just saw the organization wandering around. They were very focused as a group. So, yeah, you know, good for them.
And you know what? I actually think that this is good for OKC because, you know, as a young team who's trying to compete, you have to fail before you succeed, right? And especially for Shea, he didn't have a great game. He was 8 of 24, 2 from 9 from downtown, minus 17. He scored 21 points. He only got to the line 4 times, which is rare for him. But I feel like this is good for OKC, and it will motivate them to keep pushing.
How come this is good for them?
Because they're a younger team, and by a byproduct of being a younger team, they have more guys who are on the rookie scale salaries. So the 500K would mean a lot to these young guys in comparison to other teams around the NBA. And losing this against Milwaukee, maybe they just step things up a little bit for the rest of the season to lock down that one seed and be even more focused for the run to the playoffs.
Well, you know, that may be the case. I'm not sure that may be the case, but I will say this. It's going to be very hard to win minus Chet Holmgren. That to me, you know, is what you saw. I mean, the Giannis-Lopez combination, that's hard to beat. You have to have bigs. If there's anything that I recognize this, you know, no disrespect to Isaiah Hartenstein and Jalen Williams and Lou Dort, but that size, that size with Giannis and Brooke, that's just too much to overcome. And I'm not even sure with Chet in there, he is tall, but he's not big. So, you know, I know we now in an era of small ball, but it's going to be very hard to beat this Milwaukee Bucks team, especially when they play like this with a small lineup. So, yeah. You know, I think you're going to, you know, the guard play, Shea is – more times than not, he's going to have the advantage. But you have to have bigs to play against this Milwaukee Bucks team. And your bigs are going to have to be able to play at the level and bring the level of physicality that's going to be necessary to play against those guys.
You know what I thought was really interesting? There was some of the game, they were happy with switching on the pick and roll. And Brook Lopez, at his age, after all his back surgery, did a good job moving his feet and staying with those quick guards.
Brooke is a pro's pro, right? I'm not, you know, after, you know, it was a couple times I had a couple chances, you know, hopefully he doesn't mind me sharing this. I had a couple chances to work out with him. You know, he wanted to get some shots. So, you know, whatever. And I was happened to be at the same gym where he was working out. And, you know, he's a client of the company, and he's a pro. I mean, Mo, he's so good. Like, you know, so the fact that you recognize that he's moving his feet. I mean, this guy, he came into this league as a low post scorer. And I told him this. I said, you know what? You've done one of the most incredible things I've seen in professional sports, especially in the basketball. You came into this league as a low post scorer. I think you didn't shoot a three your first, what, 7 or 8 years or something. And now you are stretch five in what, year 17. And you're a defensive player right now. And he laughed and I laughed. And I was like, you know what? I just wanted to let you know, big fella, that I respect your professionalism. And I respect what you do. So the fact that you just said that, and we start talking about the, you know, switching and mindset and how you have to play together in today's game as a big. So for all of you young big guys out there who are playing, and I know you guys aren't getting the touches on the offensive end like you once did. I know the game has changed. However, you know, it's hard for these bigs to adjust. And you know my dream. So the fact that I was hanging out with a 7-footer, it was great. And I'm just happy for him, happy for the big guys, because it's, if I ever do coach, I'm just going, I'm just big guys. They play small ball. I'm going big boy basketball. I loved it. So, but no, he understands this game, and he was sharing things with me, and I was learning. So it was great for him. And but I'm not surprised that he's able to do this even at his age, in even in year 17.
Shout out to Brook Lopez every time. Shout out. They also confirmed the new All-Star format for the All-Star game, which, as you can tell by my voice, I'm absolutely ecstatically thrilled about. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. I can't contain my excitement for the new tournament for the All-Star game, which is, it's cool. We'll see if the players are more excited than I am, which will be hard. But BJ, let's talk about this. The article you sent me today, for those who haven't yet read it, it's on ESPN. And the title of the article is Adam Silver Looking into Critiques of Increased Three-Point Volume. Now, BJ, you may be the critic they're referring to in
Oh, no.
What's interesting is in the NBA Cup final, Milwaukee Bucks were 17 from 40 from downtown. The OKC Thunder were 5 of 32 from behind the arc. Is there anything you would like to add to your previous remarks on,
No,
the
I said
explosion of
everything I
three-point
want to say.
shooting?
I move I've moved on. I'm not gonna, pile on. I said what I said that day. I don't know. I don't even remember the conversation of why, you and I, we talk literally every day. So I don't know. I've moved on. But what I will say is that, as we continue to move forward, right, in the game itself, is that we maintain the why we play. Why do we play this game, right? We love it. And then when you love it, you compete. And the result of competing is you play to win. And that's it. So if you're telling me shooting threes is your solution, so be it. I just, I just want to always get to the why you do something.
I love that tagline, the why, because the NBA used to have a slogan called This Is Why We Play. And before that, they had the NBA, Where Amazing Happens. And before that, they had the NBA, We Love This Game, or I Love This Game, right? What's the NBA's current slogan?
I couldn't tell
They
you.
don't have one.
I couldn't tell you.
This is from a marketing lens, from every fan that I speak to, they don't feel connected to the league in the same way they did. Now, obviously, nostalgia has some part to play in that. When you're growing up, sports are a lot more exciting. When you have real life responsibilities, you can't engage with it. But they just don't feel like the NBA is quite the same as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, maybe. And everyone tells me the athletes are more skilled now. Defenses are better, scoring is better. And what's fascinating to me is just a few months ago, BJ, the trend online was we're done with the 90s. Fast forward to now, and the trend online is NBA viewership is down, no one's watching. We get so many comments on Instagram every day of we're not watching. They're watching the podcast, but they're not watching the games because why they need to. They can come here and get everything they need to know. But there is a problem, I guess, in capturing fan viewership. I asked my friends just now, right? I said to them, did you guys stay up for the game? And these are like real basketball fans. I said to them, did you stay up for the game? In a group of five of us, one of them stayed up for the game because he's a Bucks fan and he fell asleep during the first quarter. And then someone was telling me they saw a video talking about, I'm not sure if it was Bill Simmons or someone else, saying the NBA had such a big push to market to international fans that the US fans now feel neglected. I don't know what it's like over there for US fans, but they feel somewhat alienated from the league as well. So when we talk about viewership dropping and things like that. How much of that do you attribute to the style of basketball compared to other factors such as the league's marketing and other things that may drive viewers away or not draw them in?
You know, before I get to that question, you know, I can't remember who you just said had a comment. American fans feel.
I think it was Bill Simmons, but I didn't see it. Someone was just telling me about TikTok they saw.
But I just want to address that idea. Okay, so let me make sure I get this right. We're playing a game that's truly a global game, right? And technically, it wasn't. I mean, technically, it's a Canadian game. It was
technically, but
yes, a Canadian game, right? And then all of a sudden, now we want to start putting this is a European fan, so this is American fans. Okay, I'm we've done enough to mess up the game. Okay, we've done enough. Let's just take care of the game of basketball that truly is played globally, right? It's is a global game. I don't know who owns it. You know, I don't know if there's an American way to watch the game, which is different than the way you watch the game in Europe, way you watch the game in other parts of the world. But I'm not buying that. What I will say is that the game belongs to the people, okay, regardless. Now, this is what I see. You ask, what is the slogan, Mo? What do I see? I see a system now that is and was designed to do exactly what it does. Now, what does it do? We can have that conversation. But the system is designed to do exactly what it's currently doing. And this is what we're observing. Until we want to improve the game, then the system will continue to do this. Now, the people have spoken. Everyone has said what they've said. The fans have spoken. We heard the commissioner as recently as today address the issue. Mo has spoken, others have spoken. So we have the ability to change it. So we have to look at the system. Who put the system in place, right? The system is and was designed to do exactly what it's doing. They wanted the game to look a certain way. Well, Mo is looking this way, and now the fans and the consumer has spoken. It would only make, you know, that we probably should reconsider how the game looks. And if we want it to change, let's do something about it. If not, let's move on. I've said it, you said it, others have said it. So we can, there's no sense of piling on to it. That's the slogan, the system. We want small ball. So this is what we have, and this is what we are left with now. So that's how I see it. I just see it very simple. That's what it is. Somehow this is what we want, or the people who have that influence, and then we go with it. Now, you know, but if they want to talk about it, I'm available. Yeah. Hey Mo, hey, I'm available. If you want to discuss it, I'm available. And if not, let's move on.
Well, what's interesting to me, okay, because everyone knows the Celtics shoot a lot of threes. The part that they don't mention is the Celtics have an elite defense, and they have five guys on the court who can guard. BJ, do you know who's the second team in the NBA in terms of three-point attempts this season?
Is it Cleveland, maybe?
No.
I have no idea. Who,
it's the Chicago Bulls.
Wow. Didn't they just miss, like, they were in a game, weren't they?
Yep, they set the record for the most missed threes in a game against the third place team, the Charlotte mm-hmm. Hornets, who have taken mm-hmm. 1,111 threes so far this season.
Wow.
So this notion of we're going to shoot a load of threes and win games, it doesn't work for everyone. You don't all have Jrue Holiday on defense. You don't all have Tatum and Brown on offense. You don't all have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. You don't all have, you know, these high-level talents. So trying to mimic the style is a little bit redundant, in my opinion. Because clearly, if we're looking at the top 10 teams in three-point attempts this season, the Celtics are first, the Cavs are fourth, the Magic are fifth, the Warriors are sixth, and then the Timberwolves and Grizzlies are ninth and 10th. But amongst that, you've got the Bulls, you've got the Hornets, you've got the Brooklyn Nets, you've got the San Antonio Spurs. The Pistons are 11th, right? So shooting a lot of threes is not an automatic recipe for success. So I don't know where everyone's got this idea from.
Well, I know.
Because I have this thing.
Okay.
I went on my rant the other day about people just talking about stats, right? And they say three is worth more than two. Yes, I understand that. But people underestimate the fact that going and getting an and one, or going and dunking on someone, and this while I was talking about the atmosphere playing a pack, going and dunking on someone and the whole arena going crazy. These kind of plays, they're only worth 2 points. If you miss the free throw on an and one, it's only worth 2 points. And yet they can shift the momentum in a game. But if you're just talking about a load of three.
Who is that? Who is there? Who is there?
A lot of the fans now who try and rationalize this way of playing. And I'm assuming the analytics departments within various teams who push narrative three is more than two. I get it. Mathematically, you may be correct, but you're leaving out the human aspect of someone getting crossed over on the perimeter and then they get blown by and someone finishes with a layup. This is what basketball is about. If it's just a math problem and we're just going to shoot three after three, why doesn't every field goal attempt just be a three-pointer then? What's the point? Do you know, if we're really going by the math, every shot should be a three.
I want to say this, and I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm going to say this. As you know, I was in Vegas.
Yes.
And you know, Mo, you know how much I love the game, right? It's one thing to be the old guy and hear. And, well, I truly don't care about errors. When I say errors, I just love the game, right? And, hey, when I see something new and someone brings something new to the game that pushes the game forward, that's just cool, right? I love the creativity of the game. This week, Mo, as you know, Mo, I spend just as much time now globally with youth sports, international sports. As you know, I was just in Europe recently, and then I go to high school games here, prep games, collegiate games, pro games. So and the reason I do that is so that I can look for trends, understand the game, understand the teachers of the game. You know who really changed the game, Mo? And I hear people go all the time. You know, it's always, you know, you always say, well, you know, people say Jordan changed the game. And then now people will be like, well, why are they shooting three? Steph Curry changed the game. You know who really changed the game, Mo? It was Tim Duncan. And you know why Tim Duncan changed the game? It's because I've met now with so many coaches from around the world, and they all have the same complaint. The players aren't ready to play. And I thought, and I say, every time they say this to me, I always think to myself, well, if you're in college, you recruited him. You gave him a scholarship. In the NBA, when I hear coaches and executives say that, I go, you drafted him. Okay? You got him in a trade. You got him. You acquired him however you acquired him. Tim Duncan changed the game because you know what everyone's really, you know what everyone really wants, Mo? They want a ready-made player.
Yeah.
That's everyone's deep secret. And you know what the real problem is, Mo? No one is equipped to actually develop the players so that when you get them, what is the first thing you do? You just start saying, you tell me everything he can't do. So before the draft, they tell you how good the player is going to be. And then after the draft, they tell you everything the player can't do. The real issue in sports today, there aren't any more ready-made players.
But that means Tim Duncan did the opposite of changing the game then. Because he had a 4-year college career, right? And then he came to the NBA and he had one of the greatest careers we've seen.
Yes.
But if he changed the game, surely everyone would be doing 4 years in college.
Okay. Tim Duncan changed the game is because he exposed the game. Everyone wants the end result, Tim Duncan. Everyone wants to have a physique that looks like Superman.
Shaq.
But Mo, who wants to go to the gym every morning at 6 a.m.?
Me.
To do the work that's necessary. Who wants that process? Everyone wants to get on social media and show me the end result. Show me the process, though. I get it. You want to be in the NBA. But you know what you don't want to? You don't want to do? You don't want to have the discipline to not eat your favorite snacks. You don't want to go to bed early. You don't want to stop doing what you do because, Mo, we love to have fun.
Are we talking about me or the NBA player?
No, right no, we're not talking about you.
This is sounding a lot like my life.
No, hey. You said that, not me. I just said
snacks, not sleeping, and the other thing. Yeah.
Tim Duncan is what every coach in the world wants. I want a guy who can help me do what? Win games. And you know why, Mo, they're shooting threes? It's because you're like, what can they do? What can the players do? Mo, you and I will go to an NBA game right now. Tomorrow, we'll get to the arena around 4:30, and you'll start seeing. Well, what time is your work? What time is your pregame workout? Yours is at 4:45. Then the next guy's is at 5:05. Well, they'll have like five different buses coming to the arena.
Yeah,
for a pregame workout. Wait a minute, this is a game that we're trying to win. So why are we spending time developing to win a game? Some players pregame was to read books. Some guys didn't even warm up. Mo, some guys like to, you know, take a whirlpool before the game. You did whatever you had to do to perform in the game. And whatever your routine was your routine. Now, Mo, when we turn on the game tomorrow, let's start counting how many coaches are on the bench. There are more coaches and developmental coaches on the bench than there are available players.
It was not Mark Cuban who hired a coach for every player.
We're talking about the game. I'm not talking about a team.
I'm just saying.
I don't know who started.
If I'm not mistaken, historically, this began, Mark Cuban hired former players to work with each member of his roster. But now when I look at the benches, I don't see that many former players.
I don't know who they are. I don't know. All I know is I'm looking at the product. You're figuring out, just because you're a former anything or whatever, I don't care where it comes from as long as it's the truth.
Well, but the point I'm making is this. The NBA doesn't really have a lot of veteran players on some of these rosters, right? Because they are just getting in all these young guys and seeing who pans out. But at least if you're the Dallas Mavericks and you've hired 12 former players to mentor each one of your 12 players on your roster, at least they're learning how to be a professional from someone.
Well, Mo, if that player is that important, hire him as the head coach. If that former player is that important, hire him as the head coach, because the head coach is in charge of minutes. If a former player is that important to your organization, put him as the head coach. So clearly they're not, because every coach is not a former player.
Yeah.
So that could be one way to look at it. Coaching is a very unique thing, right? Coaching requires you to be selfless. Coaching requires you to unselfish, selfish behavior. Coaching requires you to speak to people. Okay? You have to be of service to others. All I'm asking is for the following. Be of service to the game. But it's really hard to be of service to the game when you have players who aren't ready to participate yet in that game. We keep saying things, they're more skilled. Okay. They're more whatever. Okay. That's, I don't know how, but okay. Because there's only one thing to teach. I've never met a Hall of Fame coach who didn't tell me this. Hey coach, what's your secret? I just stress the fundamentals. If you watch a great player, I guarantee you that player is going to have amazing fundamentals.
Yeah.
I just mentioned Tim Duncan just by chance. What was his nickname?
Big Fundamental.
Okay. If you watch a great player, I can assure you.
But even like for a modern example, right? Kyrie Irving, who's known for his flashy crossovers and his crazy layups, that's built on the foundation of him having insanely good fundamentals.
There you go.
But the problem is, young people watch Kyrie Irving and go and recreate the move he did. But what Kyrie is doing is he's giving you a jab set and he's reading the defense and he's doing what he's doing. But people are just trying to
I'm not going to blame that on the kids. I'm going to take responsibility for this. I'm a little older than you, so I'm going to take responsibility for this. We, the adults, somehow, some way, the marketing of the game took precedent over the teaching of the game. And what you just said, Mo, was very profound. Kyrie Irving is exceptional. But what they don't understand is Kyrie has had phenomenal coaching going back to his high school career.
Good, his childhood, but his pops.
Okay. I played against his father in college.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I played against his father. I played against his godfather, Rod Strickland. The entertainment aspect of the game is amazing. Rod Strickland was an incredible player. I played against him, and he is and was one of my favorite players to play against. But his fundamentals of the game were incredible. But he had his own style built around the fundamentals of the game. That is why Tim Duncan changed the game, is because Tim Duncan was perhaps the last collegiate player that came to the NBA that was truly prepared for the NBA. And therefore, all of the coaches are looking out there for something that's not available. What does a coach need to keep his job? This is a fact now. He has to win games. Who's going to help him win games? Players that are ready to perform in a game.
Okay. So you think that players should spend longer in college before coming to the league?
I think players should get prepared however they need to get prepared. Mo, everyone has a different routine. Mo may want to go out and shoot. I may want to read. Some players want to watch film.
No, I'm not talking about the individual game. I'm talking about before coming to the NBA itself.
Mo, the NBA game is a different game. The NBA game now is, Mo, shooting threes. That's the game. I'm taking responsibility for what I understand about the game, which is different than what they understand about the game. I'm not influencing the game. I have my own way of understanding the game. My understanding is one thing, winning. And if you're telling me shooting 75 threes in a game is going to win between two teams, hey, That's a difference of philosophy. I have a way that I understand. Okay. Now, I play the game with my why, and you're playing the game with your why. I'm not, I don't have to compare. I'm going to have, you know what I'm going to have. I'm going to defend. I'm going to limit your shots. That's called rebounding, to one shot, if you even get that shot up. And I'm going to pass the ball to the open guy because I want to shoot as many uncontested shots as I can. So if I consistently do that, defend, rebound, and pass, I feel I have a significant
opportunity. I feel like you should clarify when you say uncontested shots.
Uncontested
shots. What kind of shots you're talking about here?
Uncontested basketball shots. I don't care where they're from. They can be if I get an uncontested shot at the three, shoot the three. If that's what the defense is giving me. If I get an uncontested shot at the mid-range, take that shot. If I can get a direct line drive to the basket, take that layup. But what I'm not going to do, Mo, is settle and let you off the hook as a defensive player. No, you're going to have to play defense against us. Now, but that's just me. Now, if you ask me how I want to play, that's how I want to play. I want to get after it on the defensive end. I want to limit the other team's second shot opportunities. And I want to shoot the best shot available. Because I know the percentages tell me, right? This is the analytics of the game, that my shooting shot percentage is significantly better when it's not a contested shot. So, hey, guys, let's play together. Let's move the ball to find the guy who has the best shot available. Now, Mo, that's principled, fundamental basketball. And whoever does that the best will probably win the game. But if you're telling me a dribble up three from 40 feet is a good shot, so be it. My why is to win. That's my why. Now, that's my why. So, Mo, if I do, for whatever reason, fall into coaching, I can assure you that we can go back here and you'll say, oh, that is exactly what he's doing.
BJ, if you do fall into coaching, can I be one of the random assistant coaches on the bench?
No, you would be my assistant. you would be my main assistant, because everyone, we will have a unified thought. We're here to do one thing. I'm not here to develop. I'm here to do one thing.
Win.
That's it.
Shout out to DJ Khaled.
All that other stuff is just a distraction. I'm here to do that. And what's going to be required to play for me to do that? You must have the fundamentals of the game. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to box out with me. Why? Because, hey, I'm going to ask you to rebound the ball. Well, coach, I got to develop that. No, you don't. Shot goes up, box him out. And if you can't box him out, then
bench.
Here's the best teacher. Sit over here with me until you figure it out. Hey, Mo is open ahead of you. Pass him the ball. Well, I didn't see him. Okay, guess what?
Bench.
Mo over here, sit with me. It's simple as that. Mo, pass him the ball.
No.
Pass him the ball.
Yeah.
Mo's guy gets a direct line drive, goes right to the basket.
Bench. Also, that will never happen. You can't drive at me. I'm picking off flagrant. I don't care.
Mo, I can. This is what I'm saying. Mo, I'm just going to ask you to defend, rebound, and pass. That's not a developmental thing. Mo, either you can do it or not. Because our why demands that we do that. We will reward the behavior that will encourage us to do what we all set out to do. We will reward that behavior. What am I developing? Well, I got to develop my step back. Mo, I'm trying to get as many uncontested shots as I can.
I seen a clip on Instagram of Damian Lillard the other day. And the guy interviewing him said, what's the three things that you would teach to a beginner at basketball? And the video started off really well. He goes, pivot. Like your jab steps and your pivot would be the first.
It doesn't thing. Require you to doesn't no, even no, require no, you no, to no, dribble no, the ball. No. You so don't even have to dribble the ball to
it
do that.
It starts off great. And I'm thinking, yeah, great. Keep watching the video. The next one, he says a crossover. I say, yeah, that's, you know, you've got to have a crossover in your bag, either right to left, left to right, whatever you got, right? And then the third thing he would teach to a beginner is a step back. And I closed the video. I was like, no, I'm not watching more of this. I don't think people understand. A step back is a counter move. And in order for the step back to even be effective, you have to establish your threat as a driving to the rim. But if I know that you're trying to shoot a step back, it doesn't work. Like, if I know, BJ, if we're playing, even if me and you are playing once, and I know you don't want to go to the rack and you're trying to get a step back off, you're never going to score it. You're never going to score it because I know what you're trying to do. It only works if I think you're trying to dunk on me and then you pull out the step back. Like,
I'm going to apologize for giving this. I'm not going to even tell you when I saw this.
We don't apologize on this show.
No, I'm going to apologize because when you see things, my natural instinct, especially when it comes to basketball, because that's the only thing I feel like I kind of have a very, you know, like an understanding of it. So I saw recently these young people doing a Euro step move. Like when I say young, they were younger than like say fifth grade here. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know, they couldn't have been more than 12 years old. And they were practicing this step through. Like the Ginobili step through.
Yeah.
And I just watched it. I watched it in amazement that they were practicing. Like, I'm 10 years old and I'm practicing a Euro step.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I watched it is because the following was said to me, like, as I was watching this workout, like, you know, I don't know, it's a 12-year-old and there's like four kids and they were all practicing the Euro step, you know. And then someone just casually went by me and said, God, I wonder what kind of shot blockers you have that's 10 years old where that move was hit. I'm sorry, I can't even get it out. Someone said, I wonder what kind of shot blockers that they're playing against that they need a Euro step in like 10 years old. And I was thinking the same thing, and someone just said it out loud. I don't understand why we're teaching kids these moves. Like, these moves, you develop those moves as you need them. Like, Mo, how about teaching a kid to just get by someone?
Mm-hmm.
That's called direct line principle. Like, Mo, why do I have to do a Euro step? How about this? If I just keep getting you with a direct line principle, and then, Mo, when you cut me off, then I use that move. But first, prove to me that you can beat me in a direct line before I start playing defense. Right? I mean, Mo, like, I get why Ginobili was doing it, right? He's trying to get around Shaquille O'Neal. Mm-hmm. I get why some guys shoot fadeaways because you're shooting over David Robinson, for instance. If I'm playing against a player that's smaller than me, why am I fading away? Like, I'm playing against a player that doesn't have a lot of speed. Why am I using a step through? Just go by him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not even teaching the players to read the game. Like, get by your opponent. So, and I'm apologizing because, you know, those kids were doing what the coaches were saying, or these were trainers. But why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Why are we teaching our kids? Why are we teaching our kids, you know, all these moves? Like Mo, when you play in the NBA, where it used to be, but now not now. I mean, Mo, you had limited dribbles that you could utilize when you played the game. Now, Mo, it's nothing. I've seen players dribble 15, 20 or more times in one possession.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mo, that was unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
That was unheard of. So, but yeah, that's.
See, BJ, you can't make me your assistant coach. Because if there's ever a game you can't get to, I become the head coach by default. If I see you dribble more than three times, you're going to the bench. If I see you get beat on defense, you're going to the bench. If I see a loose ball and you don't dive for it, you're going to the bench.
No, Mo, don't
Everyone's
be a video.
To the bench.
You can't be a video coach, Mo. The game has to dictate. Remember why we're there to win.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you're going to be a coach, there's one thing we have to do. We have to always, our behavior has to match time and score.
Yes.
We're up 25 points. And why is my best player diving on the floor?
And we're up 25. If we're up 25, I wouldn't have the best player in the game. Well, okay. I'm not Tom Thibodeau.
Hey, this is the NBA. This is the NBA. Okay.
You need your 27. Get your 27 and get to the bench.
It's the NBA. You know what, Bo? Hey, this is the NBA and everybody makes a run. Hey, Mo, being up 25. Hey. Because if my guys are down 25, I'm not pulling my guys out. Hey, Mo, it's early in the shot clock.
Have you watched an NBA game recently, OBJ? Have you watched an NBA game recently?
All I'm saying is me. I'm not watching the NBA. I'm watching me. Mo, the score is always 0-0 if I were coaching. If I were coaching, the score is always 0-0. We are stressing behavior. We are rewarding behavior that indicates us of our why. What's our why? Why do we play? We're coming here to win. We're coming here to win. So, yeah, if I get thrown out, Mo, you will be prepared. That's one thing I can assure you. If I were coaching, we will be prepared. I'm not worried about winning and losing. Everybody's winning. And then these guys give these press conferences. Well, we're going to hear championship. No. We're coming here to do one thing. We're going to compete. We're going to compete. Now, I don't know how I don't know what that's going to take us, but we will be prepared and we're going to compete. That's our why. There's no other reason that we're playing. There's no other reason I'm asking you to play on a back-to-back. There's no other reason I'm asking you to practice. It's because we're here to do one thing. Now, all I'm going to do is one thing that's necessary, though, if we are going to win, we got to trust one another. I have to trust you and your decision-making. Why? Because I know we prepared you as coaches. And also, the players have to trust me that I'm going to do the following, which to me is one of the reasons why so many players were able to play 82 games. We trusted the fact that the coaches respected our bodies. That to me is one of, if not the biggest thing in today's game, that's from yesteryear to now. These players aren't playing because I don't think they trust the fact that the people trust the fact that, hey, this guy can help me get through 82 games. When you are a veteran, 10, 11, 12 years in the league, I saw this with my own eyes. You went to your vets and you told them, you shared with them how they were going to be utilized in the game. And you stuck to that out of respect for that vet, right? You didn't play a vet 35 minutes for no purpose at all. You took care of that vet, and all you asked is, just give me what you got. That's why you always hear me say that, Bo. Okay? And when I was a young player, Mo, I knew I had to play those minutes that the veterans didn't need to put and beat their bodies up when I was a young player. That was my job. Mo, you understand what I just said there?
Yeah.
We're in game 35, right? When I'm coming off the bench. We know we're going to be a good team. Or at least we believe we're going to be a good team. And I know that coach needs me to play 28 minutes during this 10-game stretch, so that we don't beat up the starters.
Yeah.
Mo, that's an enormous responsibility now that you have as a player coming off the bench when you know that we have to work our minutes. We got four games in five nights. We're going to substitute differently now. We're going to cut the rotations from 8 minutes now to 5 minutes. And we want to keep everybody's minutes under a certain amount, no matter win, lose, or draw. This is when I started really evaluating coaching. When you see coaches are willing to respect the player's body and not just try to get a win just to get a win. I probably could have pushed these guys to get it, but I know I got to get them through this 82 games. And the players understood that and respected that more. Because you know what? What are we here to do, Mo?
Win the championship.
We're here to win the championship. We're here to win. However, Mo, everybody knows that 82-game schedule, that's what makes this unique. And when you see coaches who respect that and the players know that about that coach and that coaching staff, now, Mo, you have it's like connected, Mo. When you know that coach is sitting there going, you know what? I could have played Mo 40 minutes. And I know Mo would have gave me 45 and 15 and probably won that game. But, you know, I know next week versus such and such and such and such, he won't have any gas left in the tank. Yeah. So respect this 82 games. If anything we've done now is we've disrespected that part of the game. And I say we because we're the adults here. And all of those former coaches will tell you that. Today, Mo, I don't think they even know that. I don't even think they know this. Right? And I'm saying this is, and the reason I'm saying this is because every athlete understands that. When your guys are tired, you got to put together a practice plan that's going to work around your guys when they're tired for whatever reason. For whatever the reason may be, right? I mean, you have good days, you have bad days. Some days, Mo, you may go to bed early and you go to practice and you just had a bad day of practice. Other nights, Mo, you may have extracurricular activities going on and you go to practice and you just have the greatest practice you've ever had.
Mm.
Okay. Whatever the case may be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the thing is it is our job as coaches, executives, teammates, is to help each other get through that day. How do you get through that day? How do we get through that practice, that game, that quarter, or whatever the case? But I had coaches, you know, and Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson used to always say this on the first day of practice. I need you guys to trust me that I'm going to get you through 2-a-days for the entire month of October. Mo. Don't worry about being great. Don't worry about trying to make every shot. Just trust me that I'm going to get you through 2-a-days for an entire month. And we'll figure out how to work everything out. Now, Mo, that's a heck of a statement.
Mm.
These guys do 2-a-days for like 2 days and they're like, oh, this is crazy. Mo, we had to do 2-a-days for an entire month.
That's a real training camp. Come into the season
and
in condition.
I had to trust him that as long as I gave my best effort, he was going to help me as the coach to get through it. If he saw me struggling that day, he would make sure that I was able to get through that practice. Now, yep. Mo, that's a different type of coaching. And that's, to me, is the responsibility, or that is the type of communication. That's the type of relationship that you're going to have to have with your players if you're going to be available. Because, Mo, no one can be ready just at their best for 82 games unless you're built that way and everyone is like trying to get you through that process.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it, Mo. We talk about this I think it was, I think he was like 40 years old. Michael was like 40 years old and played in 82 games. There was a reason that Doug Collins was sitting there.
He hired him. He hired Doug Collins to be his coach because he told him what he wanted to do.
Well, Mo, no, that's called communication.
Yeah.
We're professionals here. Mo, you understand? They're professionals. So, as always, Mo, thank you for listening.
No, it's good conversations about basketball. Hope that you guys at home enjoyed listening to this one as well. We'll be back tomorrow with more. We're going to talk about the Denver Nuggets potentially making some moves. They might make some moves before we even record tomorrow's episode.
Hey, speaking of the Denver Nuggets, can I just say something real quick?
Of course.
Real quick. Jokic had like a triple-double, and Russ almost had a triple-double in the same game. Yeah. I thought, Russell looks really good. I mean, he's always looks good to me.
Called you in the preseason and told you, I like Russell Westbrook?
Did. Yeah, you did.
If you do want to know more about Russell Westbrook's fit on Denver Nuggets, there is a great video on YouTube. It's on a channel called Hoop Genius.
I've always said this, you know, he just gives you maximum effort.
That's what you can really ask for.
That's all you can ask for. And I've always had so much respect for him. But to watch him play at this level, at this stage of his career, it's pretty impressive, Mo.
Yep.
It's very, and he seemed like he's found a comfort zone there.
Yep.
I think that was a great pickup for them.
I think they're 5-1 in the 6 games that he started.
Yeah, I think he gives them a nice counter with his speed and quickness. And he's, you know, he just seemed to have found his little rhythm. So good for him. Good for the Nuggets. And I think it would be interesting if they can add a player or two. I really do. Yeah. I don't know who
we'll
can give up.
We'll get into that tomorrow. We'll get into it tomorrow because I've heard some whispers. But before then, subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And until next time, get buckets.